All right, you better buckle up. Halloween puns galore coming your way. Happy holiday. Happy Halloween. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for listening to the program. A little Friday energy for us here. Phone number 888-710-4ISN. X Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Ryan Hickey, Ryan underscore Hickey number 3. Ryan told us earlier this week, the executive producer of the show, that he was going to go for Halloween, dress up as a loser. I thought he meant to the parties tonight. He came to work dressed as a loser. He's got a Penn State jersey on, or hoodie. Look at him coming in costume. I love where his head's at. Speaking of losers, we'll get to Mike McDaniel in just a moment. Scott Woodward, he already gone. We'll talk about the collegiate and the NFL level, two games that I'm really interested in. USC Nebraska, because I'm a gutton for punishment. And weirdly, perversely, I used to hate Nebraska football. Iowa, Missouri grad, kind of combo. Want them to just have some dignity again. Miss them being near the level they were really a generation ago. And Ryan pointed out to me today, Nebraska football has not beaten a ranked opponent since 1873, before football was happening. It's insane. We'll get into that a little bit. Chiefs Bills is a big game. We've got Game 6 of the World Series tonight. The Blue Jays are on the brink of being champions, but obviously they got to go through the Dodgers and a Dodgers pitcher who's been remarkable in this postseason, Jerry Harrison Jr., former Dodger, a World Series champion, longtime major leaguer, Dodgers analyst, will be on the show. We'll do buy or sell. And bum of the week's going to be tricky because I've got a carryover from last week for Ryan. He's a strong contender. We've got a bunch of people who have an opportunity. But let's start with Mike McDaniel. Dead man walking. Fired dude for now coaching. He may not make it through this next week and a half. Thursday Night Football gives the Dolphins a lot of opportunity and a lot of time to fire a head coach who had such a promising start. And who has lost the plot. Remember, this is an organization that moved on from Brian Flores, even though he won more games than he lost in his final year. And part of the reason was Flores did not believe in Tua Tagovailoa, didn't treat him particularly well. It was ugly. They went to this positive, offensive-minded, you-can-fix-Tua coach. And for a while, McDaniel was, if not the toast of the NFL, somebody that felt like one of the many young coaches, rising coordinators who were going to prove that those guys can succeed immediately and long term. Started 9-8 year one. Year two's really when things got outstanding for the Dolphins. They were 11-6. They looked like a contender. They looked like a team that had a real opportunity. And then the wheels came off. Started to be some concussion issues for Tua Tagovailoa. Serious, of course. We're 8-9 last year. But 8-9 gives you the semblance of an idea of the possibility that just maybe you can turn things around. And last night's, it was brutal. Awful Thursday Night Football game. It was a tough watch. Ravens fans, little asterisk here, little parentheses. You played great against a bad team. Your bad defense shut down an opposing offense. You've gotten yourself within striking distance of that division and just 500 football, 3-5. Good job. Way to go. I'm not going to read too much into beating the Miami Dolphins, but you got the win on the road Thursday Night Football. Wait, good job. For Miami, last night's 28-6, no offense, brutality, made it clear. Whoever's to blame, whatever Mike McDaniel can or can't do going forward at a different job as a coordinator or head coach, his time in Miami is over. And it's all about whether they fire him in 5 minutes or in 5 days or in several weeks on Black Monday when the NFL season is officially regular season come to an end. It was hard to watch. Remember, put aside that Lamar was back and that the offense for Baltimore stood a pretty good chance of putting up some points. This was a Ravens defense coming into the game that were 30th in scoring, as in they allowed 30 points per game, the defense, over the course of the season. They were 28th in total D, and that Dolphins offense was utterly and totally anemic against a bad D. 6 points against a defense that tends to give up five times as many. And Mike McDaniel, dead man walking, fired coach who hasn't been fired yet, Maybe the consequence of Tua, maybe the consequence of Tyreek Hill going away, maybe the consequence a few years ago of defensive coordinator extraordinaire going to Philly. Whatever the reasons, Mike McDaniel had to come to the podium and give us all the vision and the sound here of what it sounds like when a coach hasn't been fired but knows he's going to be.
It's a very, very disappointing, and unfortunately we're going to have to sit on that disappointment for 10 days. I know the locker room would like to go play another Thursday night game in 4 days to get this bad taste out of their mouth.
I mean, this guy is saying in 4 days they want to play a Thursday night game on a Thursday. It doesn't even make sense. And no, they don't. The Dolphins don't want to play any games. The Dolphins really didn't play or want to play the game last night. This was a home game for Miami in which they got booed. This was a home game, and I'm not going to play this, in which Tua Tagovailoa complained about his rhythm because the opposing fans were too loud. I thought maybe I've had a couple weeks here. It's been a couple weeks. Haven't decided whether I root for the Dodgers or the Blue Jays. So I thought, did I watch the wrong game? Wasn't that game in Miami? Everything is upside down. And to get booed in your own stadium is a pretty low for this Dolphins organization. They might be the worst team in the National Football League. And just to put this in a little bit of perspective, if they don't get to at least 6 wins, and it's very unlikely they're going to do that, they are 2-7. They're more than the halfway point. They couldn't score against a defense that gives points away for fun and for free. This will be their worst finish since 2007. There is a whole list of former coaches who aren't even in the NFL anymore who exceeded what is going on with Mike McDaniel and Tua Tagovailoa. And it doesn't really matter if McDaniel is to blame. I mean, maybe it does, past tense, but not going forward. Because you can fire him, and you should. It doesn't work. It's over. It's done. Tua Tagovailoa is under contract for a long time. They gave him massive amounts of money. They invested in him in large part because for a minute, McDaniel was good enough at his job to make it feel like Tua was also good enough at his job. The real failure of Mike McDaniel for the Dolphins going forward is not this season, where they're probably going to finish 4-13, maybe. Or even last season, when they were 8-9. The real problem is 2023, when the Dolphins look good enough, when the Dolphins could lose to a Chiefs team, and you go, that doesn't really matter, it's the Chiefs at Arrowhead. When the Dolphins showed semblances of excellence, where you gave Tua Tagovailoa that contract. Would have been better to just have Brian Flores stay the coach and have Tua be bad enough that you didn't pay him. You're getting booed in your own stadium. And I'm just going to play it because I find it funny. And I don't dislike Mike McDaniel. But how do you answer if the team doesn't respond to you, if you get humiliated every week, if you can only beat a team maybe as bad as you are, if the Ravens looked like peak Chiefs against you despite the fact that they are awful defensively, how do you answer the question, hey, Mike, you guys got booed by your own fans last night?
Yeah, it sucks. That sucks. All of that does. But, you know, I think it's a pretty consistent formula of, you know, fans enjoy winning. And so our expectation is that we have to do the work and do the right things for fans to enjoy the experience.
And this is one of the dilemmas across the National Football League. When you have a quarterback who can be or should be or based on where you drafted him, has the potential to be your quarterback for the next 5 or 6 years. You have to get the right coach in, not just to get the best out of him, but to understand in the second contract, the non-rookie deal, when the guaranteed money flows in, whether or not he's the guy. Remember, this all started, this reality of having to pay quarterbacks and having to pay young quarterbacks early, when Kirk Cousins went to Minnesota, even though he wasn't a young guy. When the guaranteed money became, and this, it was a process building. It was $87 million, 3 years of memory serves guaranteed for Cousins, his first time as a Viking. And then you go a short stretch several years later to Deshaun Watson getting $225, $230 million guaranteed. The reality becomes that every quarterback in the spectrum of being a starter in the NFL who shows any promise, So I don't mean some quarterback who fills a hole and you know won't be the quarterback of the future. I don't mean some quarterback who is trying to fight for his career the way that Baker Mayfield was the first year in Tampa Bay, though he transitioned to the other category. Almost every quarterback that has a chance to be a starter on a 2 or 3 year timeline or longer, they thought Tua was longer, is going to get paid such a massive amount of guaranteed money. And there's going to be so many poison pills in that contract as it relates to the cap that you can't get it wrong. And so the problem for Mike McDaniel isn't just that he's losing. It's that Mike McDaniel and Tua Tagovailoa together looked like the answer. And so they gave the quarterback the contract they can't get out of. And they can get out of the coach's contract, which means they have no choice but to fire McDaniel, might as well do it now, and pray and hope they can find someone who speaks void of silence and merit to reason and can reach this guy. And by the way, Tua, and I'm not going to pretend Tua's a leader. I'm not going to pretend that he connects with the guys. If you could take a poll of Dolphins players, and not that that's the way that you should run a football team, I would venture to bet all of Ryan Hickey's money, and I don't want Ryan to be poor, so I take this really, really seriously, that they would vote to have Mike McDaniel fired and Tua Tagovailoa go be a void of silence somewhere else in America with another football team. They can't get rid of Tua. And this might seem small and it's kind of funny, but this is what it sounds like when you don't know how to answer basic questions, when you don't understand the magnitude of your words. Because inevitably, Tua was going to be asked, what do you think about Mike McDaniel's job security? And this answer is a cop-out. It throws his coach under the bus, and it recognizes, or it fails to recognize, the fact that when you're the QB and your coach is under fire, you don't have to like him or believe in him, but you can't say this.
I would say that's above my pay grade. You know, I let those guys upstairs worry about that and do what they need to do in terms of how we're working things with the team.
That means you're fired. Look, do an experiment for me. I would do it if I was in New York, but I'll have Ryan do it. You can go talk to Ryan Hickey. You can go talk to Ryan Hurley, who's the boss. So, Ryan, you do this for me. But wherever you are, wherever you're listening in Iowa, you're listening in Albuquerque, you're listening in New York, walk into your boss's office and just be like, hey, actually, don't do it. I don't want you to get in trouble. I'll have Ryan do it. And be like, hey, am I in good standing here? Like, everybody like me? And the answer is probably, yeah, everybody likes you. But if your boss goes, right, and this goes, it's above my pay grade, you're done. You're finished. You're in big trouble. Tua Tagovailoa answering that way is simply saying what I know, what Mike McDaniel knows, what the reporter who asked the question knows, what everybody knows. He's going to be fired. But that doesn't mean that you say it. It doesn't mean that you go to the press conference and pull the, it's above my pay grade. You're the quarterback. What do you mean your pay grade? And first of all, you make more than the GM. You make more than the decision makers. If you're doing it based on pay, it actually is your call. It's not his call. It's based on hierarchy. But the point is that Tua Tagovailoa is not the answer. He's a big part of the problem, but it's over in Miami. And this may seem absolutely obvious, but if you're the Dolphins and you win that game against the Ravens, if you beat a Ravens team that themselves could have been, 2-6, had somehow Miami found a way to win this game, had you stomped on and put some points up against a really bad defense, there's a world where maybe you can salvage the season. Maybe you can salvage Mike McDaniel's career at this point. It isn't going to happen. But the Ravens one is interesting. People out there pronouncing them the new winners of their division is silly. They just beat a really, really bad football team. The real takeaway here is that the Dolphins are absolutely screwed because they have two under contract. And it may or may not be McDaniel's fault, but he's got to go. He is a fired head coach who is simply going through the motions. All right, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. Ryan Hickey's going to give us his Halloween plans. I'm going to give him a television show that he needs to watch that he won't. And we're going to talk about another failed sports figure who doesn't have hundreds of millions of dollars, but gave them away to two losers and is now a loser himself. We'll tell you who that is next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I hate that team, by the way. I hate the fact I do. I hate them. You know why? Well, here's why. Where they'd get together and open a bottle of champagne every year, the last undefeated team lost. You know this tradition? Shut up and stop. It's stupid. We're going to celebrate everyone's failure. Stop it. It doesn't have to be about Dolphins fans that the 2022 Arizona Cardinals lost in week 9. Who cares?
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, happy Halloween. Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. It has been a horror show of a week for Scott Woodward, the athletic director, the former athletic director at LSU. He, by the way, don't feel too bad for Scott Woodward. Gave away 70-some million dollars when Jimbo Fisher got bought out. Gave away not quite half that much when, actually more than half that much, excuse me, bad at math, when LSU parted ways with Lyon Kelly, and reportedly Scott Woodward, the now departing athletic director of LSU, is going to get a $6 million buyout. I saw that and I thought, I went into the wrong business. I can be bad as an athletic director. I can hire the wrong coach. I'm a Bears fan. I know losing. I know false hope and loserdom. And this was inevitable. And you knew it was coming when the colorful and interesting governor of Louisiana at a press conference. And remember, LSU doesn't have a president, doesn't have an athletic director now, and doesn't have a head coach. It is a hot mess. So the governor happily filled that void, got a bunch of camera time, was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. I don't know. Maybe he's making the rounds in The View. Is that show still on TV? I've never seen it, but I know it's a thing. I'm not sure what's going on. He said a few days ago, in effect, Scott Woodward's a bum.
We are not going down a failed path. And I wanted to tell you something. This is a pattern. The guy that's here now that wrote that contract cost Texas A&M $70-something million. Right now, we got a $53 million liability. We are not doing that again.
He's not wrong. Right around $125 million in goodbye money is crazy. Here's what this illustrates for me, though. The guy can't be there. Right decision, wrong decision, good AD, bad AD. Very easy for me, by the way, to pick on this guy. Very easy for me to make fun of him. And I will say this, maybe more than that, I do have the receipts from back in the day when Jimbo was hired. So go in the Wayback Machine. I think this show might have been on at night. I said it wasn't going to work. News broke. I think I was on the air. Not going to work. Everyone said, you're crazy. And I said, I'm righter than you, but just give it time. I'm a little more surprised by Lyon Kelly. I think part of what frustrated me about the way he treated Notre Dame was the fact that he was succeeding, that things were good, that it was just a money grab, that it was about greed, that it was about ego. Like, it's hard if you're a Cincinnati program or you're an Iowa program or you're a Oregon State program and your coach has a lot of success and then leaves to the next school. Notre Dame is one of the schools you spend your whole life trying to get to. And when Lyon Kelly went to LSU, I was not mad because I thought it would fail. I was mad because I thought it would succeed. And it just wasn't right the way that he handled things. But most people, not me, most people were convinced that Jimbo was going to get the job done. And most people, including me, were convinced that Kelly was going to get the job done. And Aaron Murray was on yesterday, right? Former Georgia Bulldog, ESPN, SiriusXM, college football analyst. He made a really good point. He just said, look, everybody wanted these guys. These were coveted people. These were people that were wanted on the level of Lane Kiffin right now. Right now, right? The narrative is Lane Kiffin can't fail. It was the same thing for these guys, for most people. And so to some degree, I have a little bit of, I'm not sure it's sympathy, because Scott Woodward gets $6 million not to work. Most of us will never make $6 million in our lives. But good for him, whatever he earned, that's the contract he struck. It's more I understand and I respect that he was bold that he went for it. You can't succeed when the governor of your state, especially when there's no president of the university and the state funds your school, publicly says you're an idiot and you're a moron and you can't have the job. You have been fired in that press conference, whether or not you step down in an hour or 24 hours or a week. A lot like Mike McDaniel. Last night's Thursday night game told the tale for McDaniel, Dolphins head coach. The press conference from Jeff Landry, the very colorful governor of Louisiana, told the tale for Scott Woodward. The other reality is it just highlights it's big business now. Whatever, I was having a beer with some guys last night, hanging out, talking college football. My wife's not listening. I told her I wasn't going to drink last night. I was going to come home and do some chores. But, you know, got one beer's not drinking. I read that somewhere. I think a Budweiser brochure. We're having a beer, and they were arguing and talking about whether they like NIL and whether they don't. And somebody name-dropped Jim Harbaugh, by the way. And because they'd hung out with him 5 days earlier and gave Harbaugh's perspective, which was interesting. It was a good conversation, and I enjoyed it. One of the views was, you know, we got to go back to the way it used to be, and this is ridiculous, and players moving all the time is bad for the sport. You can't have kids just leaving all the time. And now the rising reality, Cignetti did this to a degree, coaches just going to new programs and bringing half of a team or a big chunk of a team with them. Get it. Another guy said, yeah, but these players used to be stuck. It used to be indentured servitude. It used to be a situation where millions were made, they didn't get any of the money, and then coaches that recruited them would leave or not fulfill their promises, and they were stuck. You can't have that. We're talking about a happy medium and the way it used to be and the nostalgia of the old days. It doesn't feel the same, and I get this. You used to know your team. Football, even more than basketball. Basketball went this way a long time ago. If you rooted for Penn State or you rooted for Missouri or you rooted for USC or Florida or Alabama, you knew the players. You got time with them on the roster. There was a continuity to your football team. You kind of knew there was a young quarterback who was a red shirt. You didn't know much. You didn't really seen him, but you'd heard about him. And when he played as a sophomore or junior or senior, you felt like he'd been on along for the journey. You'd have a receiver who you'd see blossom over the course of his career. And that's what a lot of people are missing. And here's the reality that I told these guys as I quickly tried to drink my beer and get home from my responsibilities. It's not college sports anymore in the way you ever knew it. It's big business. It is a business. The National Football League is a business. And one of the things that guys had trouble grappling with when they went from being a college player to a pro is that the sport doesn't love you back. I can't tell you how many NFL players I've worked with, former NFL players, either radio or TV, who will just talk about the revelation. It's like the first, if you have buddies who have gotten divorced and you ever sit down and just, when did you know it wasn't going to work out? When they sort of lost that love, that's a similar conversation to the players who've been screwed over by a team or a GM or a coach that they believed in, a sport that they love, that didn't love them back. And what they'll tell you is the sport doesn't love you back because it's a business. It's football to me. It's football to you. We love watching it. The National Football League is a business. It's about making money. Major League Baseball is a business about making money. NBA, hockey, all these things, they're businesses. They're businesses. And the people that go to them are employees of those businesses. And if you're valuable, great. And if you're not, too bad. It doesn't love you back. There was some of that in college sports, but there was a nostalgia. There was a beauty to the game that was a little bit different. For me, at least, I like watching minor league baseball games. Not a lot. I mostly go to Dodgers games or Cubs games. If I'm in Chicago, I'll catch an Angels game. But every now and then when I'm back home, where I'm from, I'll go to an Iowa Cubs game. There's just a purity to it that's a little bit different. I know that those guys are trying to make money. I know that they're pros. I know they're trying to get to the majors. There's ambition. I got it. There was still an innocence to it, right? Some of those guys are there just for the love of the game, and I think that carries through. Same true in college. Most of the guys on the college roster aren't playing in the National Football League. They're playing because they love the sport. And the guys that are going to play maybe at the next level have this dream they haven't fulfilled yet. Well, not anymore. I mean, Arch Manning's not even very good yet, and he's a multimillionaire. And so the reality that hit me yesterday is that college football is a business now. It is not the gateway between high school sports and professional sports where amateurs kind of do their thing and you strive for what you want. And that's why Jimbo Fisher gets $70 million to go away. And that's why Brian Kelly gets $50-some million to go away. And that's why some athletic director who screwed it up and probably made the right move going for those two guys gets a bunch of money, $6 million, Scott Woodward, going away. And that's probably why the governor of Louisiana, in part, is weighing in. Because as it becomes a business and a money-making machine, as college football generates more and more revenue, mostly through TV deals, but as it goes from being a million-dollar business to a billion-dollar business, like in any business, there are going to be competitors in that space that take chances and that make giant mistakes. I mean, James Franklin didn't go away for free. None of these guys are going away for free. And so this is just a reminder that college sports, you like it, you don't like it, it's a business now. And the idea of amateurism is over. It's over. It is 100% about money. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. Ryan, I've got for you a TV show. And I'm hoping, I made a reference to it earlier, just talking to you socially before the show. And I'm hoping that because it's Halloween, I can get you to watch it. Are you ready?
Stranger. I'm ready.
Stranger Things, and here's my pitch. It's amazing. The final season comes out, I think, next month, pretty soon. So if you guys watch it and like it, it's not as if you're going to get into it, watch a bunch of it, and then have to wait 4 years like the rest of us for the ending. Stranger Things. I can't believe I made an upside in the upside down joke about Stranger Things, and you looked at me the way you do when I tell you that soccer's a sport.
It just it's. I've heard a lot of people say a lot of great things about it. I don't know. It's never jumped out at me. The Walking Dead, another one, very popular back in the day, never this got into it.
Yeah, that's a zombie. If you're not into zombies, that's fine. This is...
What's the premise? Overall premise, is it just an upside-down world?
No.
Black is white?
Only the premise.
Up is down?
It takes place in the 1980s, where a group of innocent kids on bicycles confront a terrible evil and have to save their city and adults who don't understand what's happening. I don't want to tell you too much. I mean, do you like Steven Spielberg movies?
Sure.
It's kind of an ode to Spielberg, an ode to the 80s. It's a coming-of-age story. There's some supernatural stuff. There's some bad guys. There's some creepy stuff. Scary. It gets pretty scary.
Maybe. I'm not going to lie to you. Probably not.
You look like you're never even going to watch the trailer.
Probably not. Never say never, but...
When you're not watching sports, what are you guys watching? What do you and the fiance watch together?
Well, the other night we had this issue. We usually go back to a lot of things we watch because we both sit there paralyzed because
just
we both are
answer.
Not very cultured.
Give me the embarrassing answer. What are you watching?
We watch Seinfeld a lot. We watch The Office a lot. We try to watch movies, but usually it's a movie.
Are you rewatching stuff?
Yes.
It's the golden age of TV.
We're watching House of Guinness. That's new.
This would be like...
We enjoy that show. We watch Survivor on Wednesday nights. Great show.
This would be as if you had access to the best chefs on earth, and you're like, no, I want TV dinners. House of Guinness looks good.
Very good. Cannot recommend enough. So, a little Uno reverse card there. I'm going to actually, you know, suggest a show for you. Check it out.
Outside of Tom DiBenedetto, who now is the executive producer of The Jim Rome Show, it is apparently a job requirement that in order to produce my radio show, you must refuse to watch any good television and have a 21% score on your pop culture rating.
You do have a track record for liking. Maybe liking is a strong word for
it's
for
unbelievable.
Associating yourself with some pretty uncultured people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to help here. I'm trying to help you guys.
How did the help? Did it fall on deaf ears for the?
It always
guys?
Works when we stop working together for some reason.
Mm.
Stu got cool, right?
He started did like, get cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Stu's a very cool guy now.
Tom DeCelestino, even pretty daddy a little bit, right? And I'll sort of branch it a little bit, which is a lot for him. I heard he smiles sometimes now.
Really?
Yeah.
Since
he
left the show.
In a year or two, when we stop working together, you're gonna be a
movie critic?
Stranger Things super fan. Super fan. I'll watch House Again. I'll watch House Again if you'll watch Stranger Things. Why don't we do next week? Pick a day. Remind me. I'll forget. Write it down if you can. We'll just do a swap-a-roo. You have to watch the first episode of Stranger Things on the same night I watch the first episode of House of Guinness, and then we do a recommendation review.
Okay.
We review the show.
I have a feeling I'm going to win that, but sure.
Well, it's not a victory. You can't win. We're not doing score. It's not going to be 101-4. What do you mean win that? Just it's subject. Just review it.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying watch all four seasons. I'm saying maybe... Maybe check out the first one. See if you like it. What do you mean win it?
I'll
it's not table tennis.
Going back to a few years ago, you said I should watch Star Wars. I watched the first three movies of Star Wars.
That was a long time ago. Oh, that's why you're holding it? I mean, okay.
That was not great. I mean, how many guys in the white
okay, we don't need to go down the Star Wars path.
Shooting
we
Han
don't
Solo.
Need to go down the Star Wars path. Let me ask you a question, whether this is a friendship foul. You want to here? You can judge me. You can tell me whether I did a friendship foul over this past weekend, all right?
Okay.
Ready? As you know, was in New York City with me and three high school buddies, one of whom I'd seen once in 20 years, one of whom I'd seen three or four times in 20 years, one of whom I'd seen maybe 10 times, 20, you know, I'd seen. We were walking around New York. They wanted to go to the High Line. Those of you who don't know, it's a former... rail thing that's above the ground that they turn into a park. It's cool. And at the base of it is a beer garden where I happen to know there's a table tennis thing. So I steered my guys to the beer garden and then go, oh, we should play table tennis. And then just proceeded to pummel them because I'm pretty good at table tennis over and over until they were all just like, we don't want to play tennis anymore. Let's leave. Is that a friend foul?
No. Okay. No, because you had to go somewhere. You know, you had to get a beer somewhere.
We got
on
beer.
The High Line.
We got beer.
Right. You're seeing a site. They're checking off a bucket list item.
I mean, I definitely knew what was going to happen. Oh, look, a table. Do you guys want to play table tennis?
Wow. How did this end up here? That's just that's crazy coincidence.
Crazy. $100 to $100 a game?
I would say that's a friend foul right there. If you just hustle and all of a sudden you're up like $1,000, they're licking their wounds.
I'm good at four things, but that's one of the things. All right.
What are the other three? Because radio's not in that.
Yeah. Nor picking a producer. Yeah.
Oh, for two there.
Yeah. That's why I have to pick producers who are really bad at radio. That way I look good. Ryan Hickey here on the show is the executive producer slash mask slash distract. You know how there's a strategy of sorry, ladies. This can apply to guys too. Lori, my wife, I'm not misogynistic. If you're 1 to 10 skill, if you're a 5, if you're a lady who's a 5, you hang out with 3s, right? That's why I hired you. 1. All right.
Damn, this took a turn.
Took a turn, man. What are you doing? They table tennis. Why are we firing each other? All right, let's talk a little. There's two games this weekend that I think are really telling for the future of a collegiate organization at the college level and a professional team at the NFL level. And I want to get into each of those games. Why Nebraska and Buffalo, even though it's not the sort of, we're not in the college football playoff, we're not obviously in the NFL playoffs, I think these are hugely significant games for each of these teams. And I'll tell you why after we have a sports flash from Andrew Fogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
And this Sports Flash is sponsored by Prize Picks. The hard-hitting football action's even better with Prize Picks. Download Prize Picks and use code PRIMETIME. Get $50 in bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. 5 days after rolling through Atlanta, the Dolphins went back to their losing ways.
End around handoff. Malik Wilson, and Wilson will be taken down. Great pursuit by the Ravens defense. Ball has come loose. Ball came loose, and the Ravens have recovered. The Ravens have recovered.
Jerry Sandusky on Ravens Radio. 3 takeaways, just 2 field goals allowed by the Baltimore D on Thursday Night Football. The offense had Lamar Jackson for the first time since Week 4. 4 touchdown passes, just 5 incompletions in this 28-6 win in Miami. Baltimore improves to 3-5. The Dolphins dropping to 2-7. LSU is now parting ways with AD Scott Woodward right after Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry said Woodward would not be part of the search for their next football coach. And the San Antonio Spurs are 5-0 for the first time ever after a 107-101 win over the Heat. Victor Wembanyama, 27 points and 18 rebounds. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Barcelona plays today. Who?
Against,
I don't know.
Who are they playing?
No idea.
Newcastle.
Right.
Not the beer. The city. The team.
Are they going to win?
It's a tough venue. They're missing the best player in the world, Lamine Yamal.
Oh,
as you know.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. I knew that to my notes.
Good news, they don't have Tua. Bad news, they don't have Lamine.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. By the way, I want to congratulate somebody, and he is not a part of this network, so I'm going to congratulate him, but I don't think you should ever listen to him. But I'm going to congratulate Colin Cowherd, who last night was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. I'm not friends with Colin, but we have lived in the same area. We were on the same local station once. He was national, but also on the station I was on in L.A. And I find him to be an incredibly decent person. And the reality of this business, and this is true, I think, of a lot of businesses, this is not unique to radio, is that people who have massive success often become massive jerk faces. Not everybody, not all of them, but there is a big time media personality who is famous in the NFL space who is loathed by almost every person that he has worked with because of how he treated people on his way up. Hey, you're my best, and how he treats people now. It does go to people's heads. Won't say the person's name, but the person is a well-known figure and the worst. Colin Cowherd is the opposite of that, and I found him to be gracious and kind and interesting. And there's another guy that's not on our network anymore, but Jim Rome, too. I mean, Jim Rome got in the Hall of Fame, a year or two ago. And I know Jim a lot better than I know Colin. Both those guys, though, have been really kind to me in my careers, and that's not unique to me. That's good. They recognized how great I am. No, they're great to everybody. They're amazing to so many people. They've helped so many careers. And so even though you should never listen to him again because he's on the wrong network, congratulations to Colin Cowherd, who is a really, really great guy and a very, very talented person on getting into the Radio Hall of Fame. If you got in the Radio Hall of Fame, Ryan, would you give a impassioned speech? Would it be a cry speech? Would it be one of this is what I like at the Oscars, where people are just ballers, like were they Barry Sanders this thing? Like, thanks, great to be in the Radio Hall of Fame. Thanks. And then just walk off the stage? Like, what's your move?
Great question. I think I'd be more short than long. I definitely would not cry.
You wouldn't.
No. Because honestly, I don't think it would like hit, even if I've had months to know that I'm in the Hall of Fame, I don't think that I could truly fully process like that accomplishment to like well after the fact. So like, okay, cool, got a great trophy. Like, I know I'm in the Hall of Fame, but like I think that would be like decades or years later, I'd be like, wow, like that's actually really cool.
All right, so I think like a crier, right? If you're a crier, that would be a Rod Tidwell. You a Jerry Maguire guy? You've seen Jerry Maguire, right?
Show me the money.
Where at the end he does the interview with ESPN and then Roy Firestone, is that the guy's name? Tells Tidwell his new contract and Tidwell's like, I'm not gonna start crying. And then he like bursts into tears. Yeah, that's the Tidwell, okay? Who would be in a sports thing, what would be the just talky talk? You just talk for 15 minutes, you won't shut up. You give like a 30-minute be quiet speech. Who would that be?
You know, Mike Tomlin doesn't say a lot, but he knows how to filibuster, and he knows how to give some very long-winded answers to, again, without saying a lot, just some very simple questions.
Because I definitely think the thank you, it's
great to be here,
would be the Bill Belichick. The shine's come off that a little bit, but just...
Thanks. It's great to be in the Hall of Fame.
And then just walk away.
If you want to do an in memoriam of, Mike Leach is someone who you ask, hey, what does it mean?
Oh,
up there for 45 minutes.
That's it. And that's when I saw a pirate in the sky of the clouds. And I decided what my offensive scheme would be. That's a really good one. All right. I like it.
What would you do?
Oh, I'm a crier. I would
really?
Cry. Oh, yeah. Can't believe I got here. The challenges, including having to be produced by Ryan Hickey. I don't know how we overcame that.
Would you at least get a ticket at least to the ceremony?
I want to thank all the producers who did make this possible. Adam Klug, Tom DeCelestino, Tom DiBenedetto, Stu Kovacs.
Pretty Daddy would get a shout out in Iowa. That's low. That is low. I'll make sure to bring some tomatoes.
Ooh. Oh, you got a shout out. You were the hurdle I overcame. You were the struggle that inspired me to lift myself higher.
Wow.
That could be your new nickname, the hurdle. What's up, Hurdle?
No. Give me Trace, please. Let's
What's up, Hurdle? Trace. It's the I'll Hurdle here on the – I'm Bill Ryder. He's the Hurdle. We will overcome him together. Although one of your distant cousins called in to say what's up.
John Hickey. How about that? So you know I'm going to ride up all the Hickeys, and maybe we'll force an army against you.
John's not a hurdle, though. All right. Dude, is Nebraska going to win this game? So USC is coming to town at Nebraska Saturday night. USC, 5-point favorites. Feels like they're probably going to win. Nebraska has not beaten a ranked opponent for 28 straight games, going back to 2016. September of 2016. I didn't work here then. I started in 2017. I mean, that is another universe. And the thing is, this is the chance, and you pointed this out, it's a really good point. Lincoln Riley does nothing but complain about the time zones. As if USC didn't know that this was going to be part of the deal. Let me just do a quick aside. I love that you stabbed a knife in the back and the front and every other part all over a million times over of the Pac-12. And then now you're complaining about what it's like to be in the Big Ten. You didn't get punished and sent to it. You weren't forcibly made a part of this conference. You chose this at the expense of history and schools you've been partnered with for a long time. So shut your face when you're talking about it. Moving back to USC, under Riley, when they go two time zones or more away, they are 1-7 straight up. Only team they beat is Purdue. So they're 1.5-7, that's what it should be, and 1-7 against the spread. Only cover was basically a pick, almost half a point against Notre Dame. And I still don't think Nebraska's going to win. And it just underscores how brutal and far they and they've made progress. They really haven't. Look, Matt Rhule just got an extension, just got a bunch of money, so they can't go and get fired from Penn State in 3 years for a bunch of money. But I do think that Nebraska is the kind of program that you have to fix slowly, Ryan. I think there are some programs that can be quickly transformed. I don't think Nebraska is one of those programs. What happened to Indiana is a fluke. That's not going to be the standard way that these things happen. And Nebraska is not an under-the-radar school, right? It has an expectation from its fan base and its boosters, and it creates a pressure and a noise and a reality and drama and probably some toxicity in Nebraska that doesn't take place in Indiana. It's different factors. Saban turned Alabama around immediately. Sark has done a really good job at Texas, whatever this year notwithstanding. There's a lot of examples out there. Harbaugh took a while, actually, at Michigan. Probably a better comp. But it's going to be harder in Nebraska. I think Matt Rhule's doing a good job. You got to start beating ranked teams when you're at home. And it just feels like this game, if they can't win this game, just even if they do, where they are, it underscores that for Nebraska to get back to being a perennial top 15 team, I think they take it. Just in the conversation for the playoff most years. In the conversation. They used to be a perennial championship contender 20 years ago, 25 years ago. It's going to be 3 or 4 years, but you have to start winning some of these games. You got to start showing recruits, especially with the transfer portal, where these sort of statement wins have immediate impact that you can win. It is a hugely significant opportunity because Lincoln Riley's team is not as good as they should be. They're talented. They're not as good as they should be. That program's not where it should be, and they don't like to travel east in the conference that is east and Midwest. I really want Nebraska to win this game, Ryan. I don't think they're going to.
And this is now the second time this year, going back to in September when they faced Michigan at home. These are two games where you could break the streak where it's kind of made. The Michigan game, you had a true freshman quarterback in Bryce Underwood. Remember, Sherrill Moore was suspended for that game, so you had an assistant coach as the head coach. It was made for you to break that streak. You couldn't do it. You got run all over on Michigan. This is made for you to beat USC. If you can't do it, you're not going to regret the Matt Rhule contract, but you start having second thoughts quickly.
If you can't win this game, when are you ever going to beat a... I mean, you hope Iowa gets ranked?
That's good. Good luck. I mean, right now, Iowa's rolling. They're scoring points
I know they are.
At a clip they never have.
I know they are. But they already lost to Iowa State. Good job, guys. Way to go. Anyway, this is not an Iowa talk. I'm rooting for Nebraska. I want Nebraska to get back there. I'm old enough. I have enough historical knowledge and memory of college football that I know what Nebraska... But I just like that part of the country. Nebraska doesn't have a professional sports team. There are no professional sports teams to the north or the east in terms of the states that border them. They were an epicenter of sports love and community for that area, for that state and beyond. And that's something that's lost. I'd like it to be reclaimed. Once it is, I'll hate them again because I used to hate them. But I kind of feel it's like the school bully being so down and out when you see him at the reunion. You're like, here's $20. I hope it works out. Let's talk to Jerry Harrison Jr. next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for hanging out. What a World Series it has been. Game 6 is tonight. There has been so much drama. Don't count out the Dodgers. And to get a perspective on it, to get some analysis, to get some insight, Jerry Harrison Jr. hanging out. This longtime major leaguer, World Series champion, played for, among many teams, the Dodgers. Dodgers analyst, Dodgers fan. Jerry, how are you? You guys are down 3-2. What's your mood? How are you feeling?
Bill, what's going on? How you doing? You know what? Listen, nobody wants to be down 3-2. The Dodgers are one game away from the elimination. They have not played well. On the flip side, the Blue Jays have played great baseball. They really have, especially offensively. But that being said, I still like the Dodgers' chances. One reason why is Yamamoto. We see what Yamamoto's done this playoffs. He has been dominant. Been lights out. Really, the last 3 months, he's been... You can make a case he's been the best pitcher in all of baseball the last 3 months. So he's going tonight. If he pitches well, Dodgers find a way to score some runs for him. They really have a good chance to force Game 7.
Jerry, there was a pretty famous viral clip, pretty well sort of talked about. I don't want to call the guy out because we all get stuff wrong. But there was a pretty well-known MLB announcer who basically said Yamamoto last outing wouldn't be able to go the distance. He can't do it 2 in a row. And obviously that was incorrect. When you're in that kind of a zone as a pitcher, does it make it easier maybe to try to go 7 or 8 or 9? Or is there a point where you just run out of steam and run out of energy with as many innings and as I mean, the guy's been unbelievable his last couple outings in particular.
Yeah, it was my former teammate who said that.
I know, Fox. It was.
I won't call him out. But to be fair to Jeet, I mean, it is so hard to do that in the postseason, especially against a lineup like the Blue Jays, who has been red hot. So for him to have done that in game two against the hot lineup in Toronto, I mean, that really is kind of unprecedented. And, you know, it just shows how great of a pitcher Yamamoto is. But also, to really answer your question, just how much work he puts in the days he's not pitching. You know, his stamina is unbelievable. He's able to make sure that he can, with his legs, his routine, his arm strength, make sure that he can prepare his body to go those nine innings and throw 100, 150, maybe 120 pitches. So his work ethic really is second to none. You see him throwing those javelins. You see him doing unique throwing programs. What he's doing is preparing his body, his whole body, to make sure that he can withstand that pressure of being able to throw a variety of pitches and locate those pitches for nine innings. And hopefully he does that again tonight. I'm not really expecting it, but again, with Yamamoto, man, when he's on, he can hit, you know, those three or four different types of pitches in certain locations to give him that opportunity to pitch deep in ballgames.
He is so fun to watch. I want to go back a little bit. I know this is sort of looking backwards, but I'm really interested in your perspective on Treya Savage because, Jerry, you know this, but this isn't, baseball's not the NBA or the NFL where a guy just gets out of college or high school and just immediately has an impact, right? Usually there's a, for everybody, for most guys, there's a process where you're in the minors, there's a process where you come to the big leagues. As you know, this dude didn't pitch in the majors until mid-September. I think September 15th was his first game. And obviously the other night against the Dodgers, he was amazing. How unusual, how impressive is it for a pitcher with that age, that lack of experience, started the season in either rookie ball or single A, I can't remember which, to come out in the World Series and have that kind of a game?
It's very rare. I think he broke the rookie record in strikeouts in game five. You know, I told our guy, you know, John Hartung, who does a great job on our Sportsnet LA, he's our point guard of our show. I told him before the series started, I go, just looking at their whole pitching staff, the way they throw, how they maneuver, whether it's their pitches, how they execute pitches. I said, yeah, Savage, he could be a problem for us. Because he has a unique delivery. He's got that high arm angle that you never see, that downward plane, and then that split finger fastball. You know, it really acts like a changeup, and it's devastating. I said, when it's on, that could really serve as a problem for us because we're a slug team. We chase slug instead of maybe put the ball in play, let's say, like a Toronto Blue Jays team. So I said, if he's on, he's going to be a problem. I saw him in game one. He was a little off. We did have good at-bats against him, but then obviously in game five, he was lights out. So for him, you know, it is rare to have a college guy come out or a high school guy come out, only have, you know, a year under his belt, maybe less than a year in pro ball. But he pitched in college. He's, you know, 22 years of age. He knows how to pitch. That's the biggest thing is as long as you're developed, if you're developed correctly, whether it's in the minor leagues or in college, you're developed correctly and you got incredible talent like he does, you can come up in the big leagues and do your thing.
Jerry Harrison Jr., what is going on with the Dodgers hitting? I mean, their pitching's been absolutely incredible, going back a couple months now. Why can't they generate enough runs in this series?
Well, I think they're, you know, it's a combination of a couple of things. First of all, the Toronto Blue Jays are getting very little credit here, which is crazy to me. You got to give them some credit here. We just talked about your Savage, the way he's been pitching. They got some other good pitchers on their ball club, too. And there's a reason why they have home field advantage in this series. There's a reason for that. They've had an incredible year because they pitch well, they locate well as a pitching staff, and on the flip side, offensively, they're a throwback offense. They put the ball in play. Yes, do they slug? Yes, they hit some home runs. But when they get the two strikes, they're not afraid to go the other way, put the ball in play. And I think that has been the difference in this series. These guys are able to execute at the plate, take what the pitcher gives you, and base hit you to death. And that's what they've done to the Dodgers. And the Dodgers need to do a better job of doing that offensively. I think that has been the difference in the series. So, you know, if you're a casual fan, if you're a fan, just, you know, just watching, oh, my God, you know, take, for instance, Mookie Betts is 3-for-23, and he's admitted he hasn't played well so far this series. But as a former big leaguer, every major leaguer will tell you this, everybody's gone 3-for-23 at some point. But he can flip the script in the next 2 days and go 5, 6, 7 for his next 10. That's how wild baseball is, and that's how fickle hitting is. So for our sake with the Dodgers, you're hoping a guy like Mookie Betts, who's a first-ballot Hall of Famer, three-time champion, hopefully be a four-time champion after this series, he can flip the script and get red hot, and hopefully that day off serve Mookie Betts and the rest of the Dodger hitters some good. They found their groove a little bit at the plate and have better at-bats in Game 6 and hopefully Game 7.
Jerry Harrison Jr. on the show. I'm glad you brought up Mookie Betts because it's a perfect example of what you just said and just how deep this Dodgers lineup is. I mean, and his three hits are all singles, right? I mean, it's not – but he can flip the switch. Jerry, is there something when you were playing that you did or other guys that carry teams that you play with that your teammates did when you're in this kind of slump and it, especially at a significant time of year? Obviously, the World Series is significant. I mean, do you go about the same routine? We saw Shohei Ohtani, right, decide to do batting practice before the game and sort of a change up the pattern. That worked. What can or should Mookie Betts do to try to get to that place where tonight he's a different player than he's been in this series offensively?
You know, kind of like a golf swing, your swing, you could be just a hair off, and it throws everything off. It could be your legs. It could be your foundation. It could be your hands, your hand move. It could be going forward and staying back as a hitter. I remember playing with the Yankees in 09. Before the postseason started, Alex Rodriguez was scuffling a little bit, and we went out and had early hitting. I don't remember our hitting coach, Kevin Long, we're watching his video side by side. We go, man, Alex looks the same when he was going right as opposed to now. He's kind of struggling a little bit. And the only thing Kevin Long noticed, I think, was his hands. He wasn't separating enough. And he told Alex that. Alex had early hitting that day, the last day of the season. I think he hit 2 home runs and had 7 RBIs. And he goes, that's it. I got it. And then Alex had an epic postseason and helped lead us to a World Series championship. So those little things, it could be a little thing that can kind of trigger your swing. And like I mentioned, hopefully Mookie Betts, he had that day off yesterday. They had a workout in Toronto. Hopefully he found something. Because guys like Mookie Betts, who, like I said, is a first-ballot Hall of Famer, it could be just one thing that could trigger it, and you can find your swing again and really get red hot.
All right, Jerry, I want you to weigh in here on a question we've been pondering about Shohei Ohtani. He comes out, I'm going back to the NLCS, game 4, and he has 3 home runs in a game he's the starting pitcher, in which he also pitched, 6 scoreless and struck out 10 or 12 or whatever it was, it's 10. And then, and I remember thinking and talking to buddies, going, man, that's got to be, especially given sort of when it was played, in competition for the greatest individual performance in the history of baseball, of a Major League Baseball game. And then he sort of holds his own beer, and in the World Series, as you know, in that 18-inning marathon, reaches base 9 times, and was he 4-for-4? I mean, just which of those also in the running for greatest individual performance in a game of Major League Baseball history, given sort of where they were, what's the better performance of those two games?
That's a great question. Listen, if you would have told me that somebody would have reached base 9 times in a World Series game, that's impossible. That's not happening. I go, that's not happening. Then on the flip side, well, what if I told you there's a guy who hit 3 homers in a game? I go, that's happened a couple. Reggie Jackson has done it. Kiki Hernandez has done it. Yeah, but he also threw 6 incredible innings, against the best team record-wise in the National League, in the NLCS, to close out. What? What are you talking about? Listen, Shohei Ohtani is the best athlete in the world right now as we speak. There's not a close second. There is not a close second. He does everything well in the baseball field. Great power, really good speed, tremendous arm. He is an elite pitcher, not just a thrower. So I don't know. I don't know what the correct answer is. Is it more impressive with the 9 times on base in the World Series game, or hitting 3 home runs, 3 tape measure shots, and then shutting down the Brewers to close out? I don't know that answer because I wasn't prepared to see that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, because Babe Ruth never even did that. You know, so listen, whatever this guy's doing, I mean, I would never put it past next year he can go out and hit 3 home runs in a game and throw a no-hitter. He can do that. He literally can do that. That's how unique of an athlete he is and how special a player he is. So, listen, there is no disrespect to Babe Ruth, no disrespect to Willie Mays, Josh Gibson, Satchel Paige, Barry Bonds, Kendrick Jr., but for what I've seen, he is the best baseball player I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like this.
It makes you speechless. And I'm with you. I don't know the answer either that I just asked you, Jerry Harrison Jr. I just know it's ridiculous that it's a legitimate question. And that, by the way, it's not like it happened three seasons apart, which would still be interesting. It happened in the same run, in the same playoff. It's just the guy is unbelievable. Jerry Harrison Jr. here on the show. All right, real quickly.
We saw Michael Jordan, right? Like 10 scoring titles, 6 MVPs in the finals, 6-0 in the finals. That's not possible. He won defensive player. That's not possible. Yeah, he did it. We saw it. Tiger Woods, when he won, was it the U.S. Open by 15 strokes, something like that? We're like, what are we watching here? But what is this? This is what Shohei Ohtani, he's got that Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, and now it's Shohei Ohtani. That type of run he's on, it's insane.
It is one of the funnest things I've ever watched in sports. I'm not even a Dodgers fan, although I really like the Dodgers because I live here. But you don't have to be a Dodgers fan to just take in the sheer joy. You said it. Of this guy might be the best baseball player, is probably the best baseball player in the history of a sport that has a much longer history, with all respect, than football in this country, than basketball, right? I mean, and Jordan's, for me, the best of all time, with LeBron a close second, but that history doesn't go back as far. If you're Shohei, you're competing against a lot of guys for a lot of years, a lot more years. It's amazing. I don't know what to say. It's amazing. It really is. All right, predictions are stupid, but I'm going to ask it anyway because now it's significant. What does your gut tell you about Game 6 tonight, Blue Jays-Dodgers?
Well, my head says that the Blue Jays, they've just outplayed the Dodgers so far this season. So far this series. So my head says maybe the Blue Jays do close out, but my heart says the Dodgers will find a way, man. And my gut also says the Dodgers find a way. My gut, I have a really good feeling about the Dodgers, man. I just do. You just can't keep this team down. I remember last year against the Padres. They're cooked. They're done. The Padres are going to wipe them out. They're going to San Diego. They're down 2-1. They're going to get eliminated. They're throwing a bullpen game. Dodgers are over. It's over. Dodgers find a way to win that game. Then they win the series, and everybody was stunned that the Dodgers came back. Then they obviously wound up winning the World Series. Just when you think this Dodger team is down, man, and they're out, they find a way. I just have a feeling, man, this offense will come to life, and Yamamoto will pitch well, and they find a way to win Game 6. They do that. Game 7 will be epic, and Shohei Ohtani would be starting Game 7. You got to get Game 6 first, but once again, man, the Blue Jays are not getting enough credit. Everybody's so focused on what the Dodgers have not done. You got to give the Blue Jays some credit, man. They have really played great baseball, man, and it's made for a great series.
On behalf of all neutrals, I will say, go Dodgers, so we can get a Game 7 in what's been a really fun World Series. Jerry Harrison Jr., you're the best, pal. Thanks for talking some baseball, man.
Anytime, Bill. Anytime.
All right, brother. Be good. Jerry Harrison Jr. hanging out on the show on X, the real Jay Hare, Dodgers analyst here in Los Angeles, World Series champion, longtime major leaguer, and a hell of a golfer. Guy can golf, too. Great dude. Great guy. We got a buy or sell for you that Ryan Hickey has put a little extra love in. He's got a surprise. You don't want to miss it. It's next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
My heart's still in Paris. Oui, je ne la parle pas. Napa.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
That's a hell of a fake French, by the way. I'm not going to lie. Every time you play that, I go, that guy's French. Oh, that's me. I'm not. I don't speak French. Welcome to the show. Bill Ryder with you. 888-710-4ISN. Let's go to Toronto. We just got a Dodgers perspective from Jerry Harrison Jr. Let's get a Blue Jays perspective from John. He is in one of the best cities in North America, Toronto, Canada. John, what's up, brother? You're on Ryder Than You.
How are you?
What's up? I'm good, dude. Happy Friday. Happy Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Happy Halloween. I just want to talk about the Jays. I know Yoshiro Yamamoto is on the mound, you know, for the Dodgers, so that's going to be tough for the Jays to win. But I think now that they're seeing him in such a close span, like within just so like close. I think they might have a big chance here of pulling this off, especially the fact that Springer might be coming back in this lineup and he comes up so clutch in such places. I just think that they're going to get it done tonight. I have that feeling.
I know what it's like for my team to win a World Series. If it happens for you, it'll be one of the greatest feelings as a sports fan. I've never had a team win a national championship. I'm a Missouri guy, and I was in Iowa before that. I've had my team win a Super Bowl, but it's been a long time, but I've experienced that. I grew up a Bulls fan. I had a lot of NBA titles when I was a kid. Ryan, there's nothing like baseball. Maybe that's because it was the Cubs. Maybe. I don't know, right? I guess we all sort of filter this through our perspectives, but if the Blue Jays win that thing today, that dude that just called us is going to be in for one of the greatest rushes of sports joy that you can possibly experience.
I agree with you with baseball. I think because the season is so long.
Maybe that's it.
Like
you invest
season,
so much.
Right. And it's like, I mean, it's almost, think about it. The season started in March. We're now in October. When you invest so much
and get
it done, it's different than any other sport.
And us real baseball fans start reading about baseball in February. Oh, pitchers and catchers are important. I mean, you invest so much of your life in that thing. It's going to be exciting. So is what's happening this weekend in NASCAR. This NASCAR race preview is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hardworking pros they serve. Following 35 races this season, 35, this one is for all the marbles. Phoenix Raceway is the site on Sunday as four drivers battled out in the winner-take-all cup championship race. Denny Hamlin, Chase Briscoe, Kyle Larson, and of course, William Byron will race 312 laps as the winner will be the 2025 NASCAR Cup Series champion. Let's go. Get it done. Let's do buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
This may be a first, Bill, but in within Buy or Sell, we have
breaking news.
Whoa.
According to Adam Schefter, the Miami Dolphins have fired general manager Chris Greer, who has been with the organization and the GM role at least since 2016. He's been with the organization since 2000. The first head is rolled. Their GM is fired. Chris Greer, according to Adam Schefter, out as Dolphins GM.
I got to be honest. At first, I thought maybe you had mispronounced Mike McDaniel. I mean, look, it makes sense. Paid to a hired McDaniel. Buy or sell, you think this has any bearing on Mike McDaniel's future? In the sense they can save him.
Sell.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Sorry, I was going to say, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I buy. Total agreement with you.
Buy or sell, this is enough for the, like, they don't have to make any moves for the rest of the season. That's okay.
I mean, it's weird because who's going to fire him now? Who's going to fire McDaniel, the owner, I guess?
Stephen Ross.
I mean, sell. Everyone knows he can get fired.
Sell.
Just put him out of his misery. Here's the other thing. You can't start, now that there's a lot of coaching and candidates available right now, I get it. But even the process of evaluation can't begin until you hire a GM. What a weird time to fire a general manager. I guess you want to get ahead of it?
I guess, right? But
it's a strange time to do this.
Yeah, especially with the trade. Maybe he doesn't want the team to get traded. So, like, you fire
the
GM,
whole team?
So he can't trade. I don't know. Right, you think the first head would roll would be the head coach. And then from there, you figure out the GM after the fact. Interesting. Also interesting, we got a little bit of breaking news before as well.
Okay.
Travis Hunter, Jaguars star two-way player, has been placed on IR and will miss at least the next four games. He suffered a knee injury at practice, Bill, and that's where this IR stint comes from. No word on if this is season-ending or if he'll be able to come back at some point soon, but all we know, the next four games, Travis Hunter will not be playing for the Jaguars. Buy or sell, the Jaguars should already start to regret trading up to draft Travis Hunter.
I'll buy.
Buy.
Buy or sell, babyface James Gladstone could be fired by the end of next season.
Sell.
That's the GM of the Jags.
2 years is interesting, and Shad Khan, their owner, is anything but rational at times. I think
that's
they're going
to
try to see this through. It is, it's, you know what? It's a reluctant sell.
Okay.
How would you answer your own question?
I mean, the thing is, could he be fired? Bye. Should he be
fired?
Right? He shouldn't be. But the owner is not exactly Mr. Consistency.
You're right about that. I want to include this. We had a caller on the line before. I want to ask you this question. So shout out to Manny in Baltimore, who has the eyes and I guess the brain behind this question. So he was asking basically, when it comes to like press coverage, right, for some receivers outside, why don't you put athletic tackles out on the edge to press, you know, receivers like Jamar Chase? If you have like a guy like Penei Sewell, if you press by the line of scrimmage, Penei Sewell's so big and strong that Jamar Chase won't be able to get off the line of scrimmage to run his routes. Buy or sell, you like Manny's thinking that more teams should place athletic tackles at corner to press receivers on some obvious passing downs.
I mean, I'll buy it if they're playing the Bears.
Buy.
I think the receivers would go past them. That's funny.
Quinn Nelson on the outside?
Yeah.
He's not locking up Jamar Chase?
But buy or sell, I'm missing something, and you embrace this idea that you brought to the air.
Sell.
Okay. I like the creativity from Manny. It's out of the box. It's new. Just when you think you've seen it all, you think you've seen every blitz or defensive idea on how to shut someone down, credit to Manny for thinking outside the box.
This is attempted 10 times by 10 different teams. How many touchdowns are scored on those attempts?
10.
Yeah, right.
All you have to do is take one step backwards, and now all of a sudden you got the leverage to where the lineman can't touch you. Yeah. I like the idea in theory.
I like thinking outside the box.
In reality.
I don't know that it would work, though. Yep, I'm with you.
In college football, Bill, Arch Manning has progressed well at practice as he's in the concussion protocols. Number 20 Texas gets set to host number 9 Vanderbilt. Now, despite a turbulent season so far for the Longhorns, that's seen them already lose 2 games and need overtime the last 2 weeks to beat 2 of the bottom feeders in the SEC, Texas this weekend at home is favored by 3.5 points. Buy or sell, Vanderbilt would make a bigger statement in winning this game than Texas would.
Oh, man. I think it's a sell. I think that it's pretty clear that Vanderbilt is an elite football team this year, and Texas is like a team. Like, they're fine.
Just a team. They're there.
Buy or sell, you think Arch Manning will have a great season next season at Texas?
Wow. Great season.
Sell.
I think he'll be better. But if we're talking about like a top 5 quarterback in college football next year, which I'm assuming is what you're going to probably say, right?
Sure.
But
that's the range. Yes.
I can't say yes.
Buy or sell, Arch Manning has been more disappointing than Travis Hunter.
Ooh, interesting.
Those were both very high players. Different levels, of course. But one was going to be the best quarterback, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the other was going to be one of the greatest, you know, a two-way player to redefine the Shohei Ohtani of football.
Buy.
I'll buy in the sense of Arch has struggled, right, obviously against, we saw Ohio State, but, like, he's also struggled against some of the, like, easier cupcake opponents they've had in non-conference and also, like, Kentucky he played very poorly in. I didn't think he was going to be the greatest quarterback since sliced bread, but also I didn't think he'd be struggling against Kentucky where they're scoring 16 points in overtime to win that game. Travis Hunter, I don't know how you felt. I was interested, but like we've seen, I feel like a lot of those kind of weird, gimmicky, for lack of a better term, players not find their footing in the NFL, especially quickly.
Yes. Especially what he's being asked to do.
Right.
Yeah. There probably needs to be a little more latitude and grace extended to him, Travis Hunter, as you would a quarterback making the leap to the NFL.
Would you also agree that some of it's on the Jaguars kind of not really know true what they're doing?
Yeah.
Again, bye.
Yes, absolutely.
So sticking in college football, Bill, as the coaching carousel continues to spin faster than it really ever has, one coach that's not ready to jump on board is Oregon coach Dan Lanning. He was on the Rich Eisen Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network, and he said this about his future.
Your interest level in leaving Oregon is less than because
zero.
Of this?
Zero. Yeah.
Zero. Zero.
Yeah, I'm not leaving Oregon. Yeah, as long as I win. That's what I always tell our my kids.
Yeah.
Right. If your dad wins, we'll be at Oregon. So I got to win. Right. That's how it changes.
Buy or sell, Bill, there's no job in college football Dan Lanning should leave Oregon for.
I think it's a buy.
Buy.
A, they're going to have as much resources as anyone on earth because of Nike. B, he is succeeding there. And C, and tell me if you agree, buy or sell, you agree with this. I think if you were going to make a power rankings of the teams with the highest likelihood of success with the lowest level of over-the-top scrutiny, I think Oregon might be the best place to be. I think you can get away with a loss here or there at Oregon without people freaking out the way you can at Michigan or Ohio State or Alabama or LSU or Penn State even. And they're really good, but...
Bye!
Right? Like, they have Penn State season. It's like, okay, well, that's really disappointing. It's not fire this guy immediately and blow everything up. They just seem to be a little more rational.
Kalen DeBoer loses one game. Let's get this guy out of here.
100%. If Kalen DeBoer loses to Auburn, they might want to fire him.
You're right.
Yeah, fairness. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, you're 100% right.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. As you talked about to start the show, Bill, it was another embarrassing performance by the Dolphins, as despite facing a defense that has allowed 30 points per game this season, Miami did not find the end zone in their 28-6 loss on Thursday night. The Dolphins, when it comes to rankings in the NFL offensively, are 28th in total offense, 25th in scoring offense, as they sit 2-7. As we just talked about with the breaking news, they have fired their GM, Chris Greer. Buy or sell, Mike McDaniel should be fired today.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
I think just move on. You know, it's you're right. We opened the show with this earlier, and I've sort of gone through this. Now you got to figure out who's the interim. Like, who's your interim head coach there? Anthony Weaver, I guess, the defensive coordinator?
That, I guess, has gotten some head coaching. He's gotten interviews and maybe some whispers. He could be good.
Yeah.
But even if you like him, what is he going to, like, he takes over this roster, what's he proving in 7 or 8 games?
Yeah, I just think it's more about getting McDaniel out. Buy or sell that if Anthony Weaver ever becomes a successful head coach, we should call him Dream Weaver.
Bye.
Play the song, because he's weaving NFL dreams.
Absolutely.
Dream Weaver, I believe you can get us a W.
Who sings that song?
I have no idea. Do you know the song?
No, I don't.
Are you kidding me? You don't know the song Dreamweaver?
No.
I don't know if that's the name of the song. It's just the lyric. Let's look. Yeah, it is. It's by Gary Wright. You don't know the song Dreamweaver? I guess I didn't know it was called Dreamweaver. That's crazy, man. You're crazy, man.
Maybe let's leave singing that song to Gary.
I'm working on Writer Than You, the musical.
It's true. Always a work in progress. Always
that's why it's been a work in progress. You just heard. I mean, I can't. That one doesn't align with my voice, which, in fairness, is a real problem.
It was a joke. It wasn't serious. It was not serious.
Let's leave it to my wife. Lori does it everywhere in the car, and I'm singing, and I fall for it every time. I'll be singing a song, and she goes, "Who sings that?" I go, "Oh, it's Nathaniel Rateliff." Then let him. Buy or sell that makes Lori funny.
Buy.
It actually really pisses me off because I'm mad at me. It's every time I fall, I think, "Oh, she's into the song like I am."
You got to have a long memory.
Who sings it? It's Bob Seger, babe. Let him. Then let him. Oh, man.
It's like Charlie Brown with the football. Every time, I'm going to kick it.
It is true. Oh, you know what? I'm shocked you know who Charlie Brown is.
I'm somewhat cultured.
I'm stunned.
Somewhat. Barely.
Is that a new... Did you buy a new Nittany Lions hoodie?
No, I've had this for a while.
It's very shiny. The white on it is very shiny.
Well, I haven't had many opportunities this fall to wear it, so...
But you thought today was the day.
Well, you know, it's Halloween. I'm dressing as a loser anyway. You know?
I like it.
Why not? On the flip side of last night's game, though, the Ravens, they've won their second straight game. It's not only they got Lamar Jackson back, but they've also seen their defense maybe start to turn things around. Baltimore allowed just 6 points to the Dolphins last night. They're allowing just 13 points per game over their last three games. Lamar Jackson, after missing the last three games with a hamstring injury, did toss 4 touchdown passes as Baltimore moved to 3-5 on the season. By yourself, the Ravens are the team to beat in the AFC North.
Hear me sighing? It's my level of uncertainty.
Steelers, Bengals.
I know. It's Steelers or... It's not going to be the Bengals.
It's not going to be the Bengals.
Division. I'll buy. I don't think the Steelers are very good.
A confident buy from Bill Ryder.
Yeah, that was a real... That was like that last night's Thursday night football game. Required, but painful.
Finally, Blue Jays' chance to do something they have not done in 32 years. Bill,
okay,
win the World Series tonight, up 3-2. Although they are facing maybe the best pitcher this postseason, Dodgers ace Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who has thrown two straight complete games, allowed just a combined two runs in those two games. Toronto will counter with Kevin Gausman tonight. Buy or sell, whether it's tonight or Game 7 tomorrow, the Toronto Blue Jays will win the World Series.
Oh, I mean, come on, man. That's a terrible question.
What do you mean it's a terrible question?
How do I choose the team that is down 3-2?
Because they have the best pitcher this postseason on the bump in Game 6.
I'm going to sell. I think the Dodgers are probably going to win, but...
Sell.
So there you go. What do you mean?
That's a bad question.
How's that a bad question?
Bad question.
We just saw the Blue Jays come back from a 3-2 deficit in the ALCS to win.
Yeah, we did. It happens a lot.
Right, exactly right.
Momentum's
so that's not
a
crazy question to ask you who's going to win the World Series. We're not going to be on the air before Game 7. But the next time we're on the air, the World Series is over. Oh. Baseball's done.
I just got a note from one of my fellow hosts. That, oh, this says bad question.
Sell.
Buy or sell, I made that up. No one texted me.
Buy.
As you know, because of the delay is part of the reason. Yeah.
Bill Liar.
Whoa. Slow it down, Nittany Lion. Get it? Nittany Lion.
No lion on that one.
Nittany Lion. Okay. We've crashed the...
Bye.
To quote the Big Lebowski, which you've never seen, the plane has crashed
in
the Bleeping Mountain. Have you? Good job. Do you love it? Do you watch it more than once?
I've not watched it more than once.
If you haven't seen the Big Lebowski more than once, you haven't seen the Big Lebowski.
I'm not a big fan of the dude character.
Okay, well, that's a problem for your enjoyment of that film. He reminds me of you. Let's do Bum of the Week after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, this Sports Flash is sponsored by Progressive Commercial Insurance, protecting your business vehicles 24/7. See if you can save at progressivecommercial.com. Hickey broke the news a few minutes ago. The Dolphins have parted ways with GM Chris Greer the morning after loss number 7, 28-6 at home to the Ravens last night. Miami should be sellers by Tuesday's trade deadline, but now someone else will be making any potential moves. The Jaguars reportedly putting Travis Hunter on IR with a knee injury suffered in practice yesterday. He has to miss at least 4 games now. On the heels of criticism from Louisiana's governor, LSU dropped AD Scott Woodward last night. He was under fire for Brian Kelly's huge buyout, but has his own one of those, the school and the state, on the hook for another $6 million. The WNBA and its players have agreed to a 30-day extension to their current CBA, allowing negotiations for a new one to continue without any kind of work stoppage. And on the court last night, the Thunder down the Heat, 107-101, improving to 6-0. That's the best start by the champs since the 2016 Cavaliers. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on the program. eBay is home to millions of finds, and each one becomes part of your story. From your favorite vintage band tee to the dream car you've been searching for, it's all there. eBay, things people love. Victor Wembanyama, somebody I love, and the Spurs look to build off the early season history they have made as they are on the road at the Suns on Sunday evening. San Antonio beat the Heat last night to move to 5-0 for the first time in franchise history. How are we doing on the Survivor pool? Two, down to two?
We are down to two. Bills Mafia 760.
Okay.
And OU Analytics Nerd L's. Both picks are in. Neither picked the Ravens, or I guess better off, no one picked the Dolphins.
Right.
So it's going to be decided, we believe, on Sunday. We won't be able to see the picks until games kick off, but we're down to two.
Can I make an adjustment? We were going to do a tiebreaker. Since there's just two, I think we should just, if they both lose, we should just keep it rolling, right? Until one wins and one loses?
I like it. Yeah, I mean, we're in, what, week 9?
We got time.
Yeah, we got half the season to go.
All right, let's do it. Speaking of time, it's time to find out where you rank, Ryan, in Bum of the Week.
Hallelujah, I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
You're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum. I'm a bum. I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You.
All right. can't nominate you for your question because Bella B said it was a great question. But you're nominated.
Thank you, Bella.
I forgot this from last week because I was traveling, but we're just going to carry it over. You are nominated for saying that children shouldn't go to baseball games with their dads or anybody else. Unbelievable. What is wrong with you? Hating kids.
I love kids.
I'm going to nominate Sark for his non-denial. How dare you? I won't answer the question. Phil in Stratford wants to nominate Brian Kelly for Bum of the Week and failing that Bum of the Week Lifetime Achievement Award. He may be out of contention for some time. No post-game press conference meltdowns. Act now. Thank you. All right. Little Lion Kelly in there. I like it. I like it. Who else do we like on the old... you know what? You're going to be shocked to hear this, that John Fisher's illegitimate son, that's the name of the person on Twitter, wants to nominate John Fisher for being a turd forever. Vegas is a mess. Sell the team and bring it back to Oakland. I think that ship has sailed. But we'll give him a nomination, sure.
But it's it's still happening, so.
Still occurring.
Yeah.
Scott Woodward.
Of course, Scotty.
Strong contender. Who else we got? Who else do you want nominated?
This could go back to bite me. He's a big man, but I'm going to say it anyway. Has to be said. I'm going to nominate Myles Garrett. Great game. 5 sacks as the Patriots blew out the Browns. But here's my thing. You can't have it both ways. You can't hold the Browns up for ransom, get this massive contract, but then also then be mad that you're not winning. It's one or the other. Either you want to go somewhere you can win, and he said that. I want to get out of here. I want to go win. I want to be a Hall of Famer. And then as soon as the Browns offered him $40 million, you go, okay, I'll stay. Can't have it both ways. You made your deal with the devil. You took the money.
Why this week, though?
Because he's been kind of pouting now, and
he had a monster game.
He did, but it gets me upset that he's like trying to almost have people feel sorry for him. And now the trade deadline coming up, people are they're going to trade Myles Garrett. He took the money. You're not trading him. You signed away your future.
In related news, just out of curiosity, do you think you should be bum of the week for getting on Myles Garrett after such a monster game?
No, because I think what I'm saying is factual.
I think Chris Greer, maybe, that this is an opportune time to just be like, hey, bro, you put together a really bad team, and now you're gone. Also, the mutual parting thing, it's mutual. You came in today. You know what? I think it's time that I think I should quit midseason. No. You pointed this out. Ian Rappaport reporting.
That is a mutual parting away. It's not a firing, Bill, but a mutual parting.
Ian Rappaport is actually reporting that he's required to report that it's a mutual parting. So that the agent of Chris Greer will later give him information on other mutual parties. That's
exactly
what that is.
Right. That is the behind the scenes.
All right. So I think this is a good list. Is there anybody else you wanna put out there?
I'm gonna throw it out there. Does Jeff Landry deserve Bum of the Week nomination for making this a circus? Now he got what he wanted.
He did make it a circus, didn't he?
Scott Woodward getting fired.
Sure.
So maybe LSU's better off in the long run, but boy, did he inject himself into a situation that he probably did not need to, and
you know
made
what?
Quite the spectacle.
I got it. For saying the kids aren't allowed to go to baseball. No, I'm just kidding. You thought it was you, didn't you?
I was going to lose it. Not really.
You looked real angry. For that made me laugh. For giving away $120-some million in buyouts, for failing twice, for letting the governor force you out, for being the face of what goes wrong in college football when you hire Lion Kelly, Scott Woodward, formerly AD at LSU. You're the bum of the week, bro.
That's your bum of the week.
I detest you!
On Lighter Than You.
John Fisher's illegitimate son on Twitter. That's the name. I didn't come up with it. Thanks, Bill. You really have a handle on the pulse of the nation. Could not agree more. I wish maybe next year we'll do the show on video. I wish you could have seen Ryan's face. I wish you could have seen Ryan the look on Ryan Hickey's face when I started the "You Were the Bum of the Week." Kind of mean, but made me laugh.
Because it's PTSD of other nominations that have been unfairly won.
Deal with it. None have been unfair. Dude, you'll be bum of the week immediately next week if you want to say that this is, if you want to question the integrity of the bum of the week election.
I'm not questioning.
I mean, I just heard it. Let
I'm
me go
just
to the next.
Saying.
All right, saying what? What are you saying?
Look, if Scott Woodward made some bad decisions, Chris Greer gave Tua Tagovailoa a bad contract.
For Halloween, are you going as a complainer?
plenty of other people, I think, that are worthy of the crown.
You're not the bum of the week this week.
I'm very grateful.
Everything worked out perfectly for you.
Yes, it did. I'm a
You're
big winner.
Welcome. What are you guys doing? You do a little Halloween party? I forget. I know you're going as a loser. You're going to go Nittany Lions Mets combo. What are you actually doing? Where are you guys hanging out?
A friend is having some people over. So they did
How
some
many people?
Pumpkin carving. I don't know, maybe like 10.
You're going to do pumpkin carving?
No, they did yesterday, like in preparation, like, you know,
I'm sorry.
Apartment's decorated, so a couple pumpkins there.
It was going to be the first ever Rewind Bum of the Week. If you spend your Friday night in New York City on Halloween going to your buddy's house to carve a pumpkin, Scott Wilbur in your bag. It's the first time we've ever done a reverse time
Bring
on Bum of the Week.
Bring the music back.
I don't get the pumpkin carving. I don't get it.
I agree. Doesn't seem fun, dangerous.
No. When I was a kid, they would do the pumpkin seeds and they'd fry them, and those weren't very good either. I'm like, why am I eating
pumpkin
seeds?
I've never had that. I didn't know that was a thing until recently.
You don't eat them. They're not great. It's like Penn State. It sounds like a good idea, but it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
I do.
Have a great weekend. Thank you to Jerry Harrison Jr. Appreciate his time as always. Thank you to Andrew Bogus, who's outstanding. Thank you to Ryan, who's a producer. I am Bill Ryder. Thank you for listening to the show. Ryan and I are very grateful. We'll see you back here Monday on Ryder Than You.